Hi, TSP Magazine. This is Sean Martin, and you are very welcome to join us for our Hacker Summer Camp conference coverage, a series of podcasts capturing stories being shared during a variety of events taking place in Las Vegas. As part of our event coverage, Marco and I connect with conference organizers, keynote speakers, presenters, panelists, and more. All of our Hacker Summer Camp event coverage in Las Vegas is made possible by the generosity of our sponsors. We'd like to thank Reversing Labs, Bugcrowd, StealthBits, and RiskSense for their support, and would encourage you to take a look at their directory listings on ITSP Magazine to see how they can help you with your risk, security, and compliance management programs. To the teams at RiskSense, StealthBits, Bugcrowd, and Reversing Labs, we appreciate your support. Your company would like to be part of and support these conversations, let us know. We'd love to have you join us for the journey.
Recording?
We're recording. So we're here at Black Hat, and it's a great week. So I think it's the first year that Black Hat has introduced what they call Micro Summit. So today, I'm thrilled to say that we have Kimberly Price on to talk about bug bounties and the bug bounty microsummit.
And we know, sorry, before you introduce yourself, that Sean loves to talk about bugs.
I love that set. Bugs so, Bunny?
Bugs Bunny.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about. And Bugs Bunny. So I'm going to let you go with this.
Yes, I'll take the lead, but I think you'll have some good input as well.
Yeah, of course. Before
we get into the story of the microsummit, bug bounties, we want to hear your story. So a little bit about yourself. Go back as far as you like. I think that you've done some amazing things from what I know.
I've done some strange things.
And strange things. So tell us about strange and amazing.
We love strange things.
My background's actually behavioral psychology. And I went to grad school for public health. And even in grad school, I was drawn to technology. My internship was building a website for a local public health organization. And then, you know, everything that I was doing throughout grad school and my first jobs out of college, you know, I work for the health department, but I'm the IT liaison for the department, rolling out DHCP servers. And so once I moved to Washington State, I ended up working at Microsoft completely unexpectedly and had the opportunity to start MSRC's Security Researcher Evangelism Program, which at the time was called Security Researcher Outreach. And that's where programs like Blue Hat first started. I worked on that with Wendo Snyder. And so you have this long, unusual roadmap, which, you know, after doing MSRC, did some work in Internet Explorer as a security program manager for IE8. Left the company, did incident management at BlackBerry, where I got my first taste of open source security management, and did that for about 4.5 years. Ended up in the bug bounty space, basically coming back to the researcher engagement work, and worked at Bugcrowd for a few years. And it was fantastic getting to work once again in application security and researcher engagement, this time on the offensive side versus in MSRC, where you're receiving a lot of the vulnerability reports. My job was advocating for those researchers with the customers and helping customers understand what the researchers had found, which was a great pivot. And ended up coming back to Microsoft. You know, he says you can't go home, right? so I came back to Microsoft a couple years ago to do open source security again. And it's huge. So it's a long winding path. Ended up back where I started, which is community and partner engagement. So my team has bug bounties, as well as a number of other programs. So everything partner related.
Yeah, and the reason, I mean, there's obviously the technical aspect to application security, but one of the key reasons I love the space, OWASP and AppSec and DevSecOps, is the community. I mean, it's such an active group of folks that help each other, mentor each other, collaborate with each other, talk to each other. They're very social and welcoming, and with the bug bounties just continues to grow, bringing in new researchers that have different ways of thinking and looking at things that maybe if they came from an enterprise CS degree wouldn't have otherwise thought of ways to explore this area. So,
well, the diversity is amazing. Yeah. Having a bug bounty enables you to really expand that net of different ways to look at things. And you'll end up with people who specialize in particular attack detection. You know, I've seen researchers who their bread and butter is insecure direct object references. And that's virtually the only thing they go looking for. I'm sure they probably could find cross-site scripting or they could do other things, but that's their jam. Yeah. And that's phenomenal. You know, if you have an insecure direct object reference expert and a reverse engineer and like a bunch of different people with their specialties all working with you, that's great. It's
totally cool.
It opens opportunities to a lot of people that otherwise wouldn't have opportunity. We heard some stories without going yet into the legals or this kind of things, which I'm sure we will, but the opportunity is somebody in India or anywhere in the world that has the opportunity again to jump on one of this program, is passionate, has a brain, has a computer, he knows how to do this thing and he got the knack for it, right? Mm-hmm. I found it amazing. Somebody may pay for his own college by doing that.
My 15-year-old daughter, for the first time, is interested in learning to program because she's recently gotten her first job. She makes $15 an hour. I told her what the minimum wage was when I got my first job, and she's like, "Yeah, Mom, I get it." But she hears me talk about some of the bounty programs and what they reward, and all of a sudden she's like out on code.org and trying to learn to program. And even she recognizes that this could be a really great revenue stream to put herself through college, you know, get her first car, things
you
like that.
You still need the passion for it, though. You can't just, I'm going to do a brain surgery because good money. No, calm down.
Exactly. I mean, I think there's aptitude, there's talent, but there's also the passion to go figure it out.
Yeah.
And to go learn
it. The hacking attitude.
Yes. Do you break things down? Mm-hmm. And, you know, can you look at what are the ways I could misuse this? Where are the loopholes? And some people just have that mindset.
Yeah.
But.
And happy to dig into a little about your program if you want to share. Any unique ways that you bring your program to bear at Microsoft that might be slightly different than other programs that I might be aware of?
Well, we have 11 different bounty programs right now, and they each have slightly different like reward structures depending on the difficulty. So in some ways, there's some similarities to most other, you know, if you go to BugCrowd or HackerOne, or even if you go to another vendor, they'll have different targets and different rewards for those different targets. So that's fairly similar. One of the things that we're working on right now is increasing our engagement with researchers beyond just money. Like, money's great, we all like to pay the bills, but how do we recognize researchers that are reporting things that may or may not qualify for bounties? What if they work for a company or organization where they can't accept bounties? We still want to recognize them. We still want to have leaderboards, but you know, more than just bragging rights. We want to make sure that when they show up with a vulnerability, they get treated like a, you know, wonderful customer that we love working with. And it's, you know, they get that experience where it's like, hey, we're so glad you're here. We're excited to partner with you. And so just today we announced our 2018-2019 Most Valuable Researchers list. We do this every year at Black Hat, but this year we've added some reputation and accuracy components to it that we're sharing back with the researchers. It's kind of like your Fitbit dashboard where you can go see how you're doing towards your goals. We're sharing back with them, hey, based on the body of your reports to us, here's sort of your profile, and now they can start measuring their impact over time. And so
continue to learn and invest in areas that they help them improve, yeah.
Exactly. So we're looking, gamification is the new hotness. Yeah. And but it's a better motivator. So much of security is a stick don't do this, right. you must mm-hmm. do that, mm-hmm. compliance, regulations. And it's like, no, let's just make it fun and easy and make people want to do something, because that's a much better motivator long term.
Yeah, for sure. And talking about that, I mean, for this year, the first Micro Summit, yeah. We'd love to know a little bit more about this. It means that it's not just few company that take a challenge and take a bet and successfully do so, and other company that open their door to find the bugs, but it's actually a topic of conversation on a place like Black Hat.
So what's kind of the goal, the objective of yeah. the Micro Summit, and who's it targeting? Is it executives? Is it AppSec? Is it researchers?
Everybody.
So the Bug Bounty Micro Summit is a 3-hour session, and all of the speakers in the Micro Summit came together in content planning. So it wasn't 3 independent tracks of content, but they all came together and shared best practices with each other and talked about, what do we think the audience needs to know if they're sort of thinking about, maybe I want to run a bug bounty? Is this for me? What are the ins and outs and the nuts and bolts of this? So the first talk is by Adam Rutterman. And he has a wealth of experience in setting up new bounty programs. He has worked at Synac, which is a crowdsourced pen test company. He was responsible for the Facebook bug bounty, and now he is NCC Group's director of bug bounties. And so he's set up a lot of different companies. He has a lot of experience in terms of, do you do private, do you do public? You know, what structures should you have in place before you even launch a bounty? And so he'll cover the first hour for those folks who are just thinking, maybe I want to do this. The second hour, I mean, we would certainly welcome those folks to stay for the second hour, because the second hour is a panel moderated by Yarick Stanley. He runs Microsoft's bounty programs, and he has 3 wonderfully diverse panelists talking about their experiences in the first, you know, leading up to the launch of your bounty. Like, you've committed, you're doing a bounty, and you're launching soon, or maybe you just launched. How can you learn from the best practices of people who've been in those trenches with you? And so one of the panelists is with Indeed.com. One of the panelists is with a motion picture organization, but has previously worked with another company that launched a bug bounty, has some great experience to share. And then our third panelist is with the Zero Day Initiative. And what's interesting about that is they have a vulnerability brokerage bounty program where they're purchasing vulnerabilities and then disclosing them to the vendor. So it's sort of a third party bounty program. And so they've got another unique perspective.
Escrow kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And then the third hour of the panel is sort of, okay, you've gone from, we're thinking about running a bounty, to, okay, we're going to run a bounty, to, our bounty is 6 to 12 months old now. How do we keep it fresh? How do we keep researchers coming back? Because researchers have so much competition. Like, they wake up in the morning and there's 5 new programs on whatever platform they want to look at. How do you get them to look at yours? Mm. Especially if, you know, you've been around for a while, maybe the low-hanging fruit is gone. And so the third talk is by Chloe Brown of Bug Crowd, who has a background in video game community management. So she is an expert on gamification. So it's
breathing new life into the program. Yeah?
Absolutely. Absolutely. How do you keep it fun? What are those carrots?
Right.
So
in those three, where's kind of scoping and figuring out where you're going to focus your program is key part, right? Where in the three of those, where does that fit?
It's going to be touched on in the first hour and also talked about in the panel around, you know, obviously researchers would like to have everything in scope. And if you think about it, attackers, they don't respect your scope sheet. So how, you know, what's the right call there, and how do you focus researchers? It's an interesting conundrum, and it's certainly one that each organization has to make for themselves, but the panelists will share some of their guidance and experience. The great thing about the Bug Bounty Micro Summit is we've also sort of put a call out to anyone who runs a bounty and said, you guys should come. And during the networking breaks between the talks, like, we want a room full of experts. It's not just the people on stage, but, you know, the person sitting next to you in the audience, they may be running a bounty for a major company, and you talk with them too.
Yeah. Keep the storytelling going.
Exactly.
That's awesome. What I like to say jokingly that every company is running a bug bounty program, whether they want to or not, whether they know it or not. they're open for review
whether
and compromise.
Whether they pay you or not.
Well, and what's interesting is a bug bounty program is just an extension of a coordinated vulnerability disclosure
right.
program. You've got to have an incident response process before you launch a bounty program, or else you're set up for failure.
Yeah. And so it's leading me into, is that the disclosure program, is that part of the session as well?
It's something that gets discussed in Adam's first hour of content, which is if you don't have a clear incident response process, you go do that homework first. That's your go-do. And then let's talk about adding incentivization on top of that. Because a bounty is simply an incentive for disclosure. But once you've got that vulnerability report, you've got to have a process to work with the engineering team to get it remediated and get a fix for customers. Or else, like, the researchers are bringing the vulnerability to you, not just for the money. They want to fix it. They want to see customers be protected. And if you're just taking the vulnerability reports and never fixing anything, they're going to quit working with you, and it's going to backfire.
And that goes back to the community piece, right? The researchers doing this work are part of the community, not just the people running the programs and fixing the bugs on the backside. It's the researchers as well, and they talk to each other.
Oh, they absolutely
do. Hopefully they're talking to the companies they're helping, and vice versa. There's a two-way communication there.
The companies that embrace the community and engage with them directly typically have better results. Yeah. And it can be a little overwhelming. There's thousands and thousands of bounty hunters around the world, and it's hard to engage with everyone at an in-depth level. But coming to conferences like Black Hat, you'll see a lot of the companies and organizations are having receptions to help them meet with researchers. Or they'll go to conferences like NullCon in India, as you mentioned. There's an annual bounty craft track that's sponsored by a number of big name vendors. The whole goal being, let's go talk about how to get from the catch line my team uses is how to get from 500 to 5,000. Yeah, you're killing it at the low dollar vulnerability bugs. Let's get you up to the Pri-0, Pri-1 stuff that's paying $5,000 or $10,000. Let's talk about how to do that and level those skills up. And so, but you're getting out there and you're engaging with the researchers and you're building that durable relationship where not only are they going to come report vulnerabilities to you, but if it happens sometimes because we're all human. You triage a vulnerability report, and maybe it gets misrouted. Maybe you think you understand it, and you say, okay, this is just an important class issue. And the researcher, you want them to be able to reach out to you and say, hey, wait, no, let me tell you more about it. I think we have a misunderstanding, versus them saying, oh, they don't know what they're talking about, and they go rant about it on Twitter. Like, you want to have that relationship with them.
I think this is a good time to talk about maybe in the community and how much you need to create a safe environment for them to perform, so that you guarantee that the good guys can keep being the good guys without being in trouble, versus, you know, the bad guys that hopefully you will filter through certain company and programs it yourself, because there is always that fear eventually. So, and how the community should come together, because again, and I'm going to repeat myself a lot, the more people are secure, the more secure is our society. So how do you see this coming along since when you've been doing this and now that you are in charge of the program?
So for as long as I've been at Microsoft, we've always had a practice of welcoming coordinated disclosure. Not every company has gotten there yet. There's a substantial movement across the industry to adopt and formally publish safe harbor terms. And that's really important, because that's a signal to a researcher that we welcome your research. There are still companies today where they try to report a vulnerability and they get slapped with a cease and desist order, mm-hmm. which is counterproductive. All that vendor is doing is pushing the research out into the public domain, which doesn't necessarily protect customers. So I think that safe harbor terms are really important for companies to publish and make it clear that when you find a vulnerability in our product, we want to know and we want to work with you to protect customers. We would far rather have you tell us about it than not tell us because you're afraid you're going to get in trouble. Because the criminals aren't going to tell you either. So, right. Yeah, they're not really helpful when it comes to securing people.
No. Whatever. I'm so disappointed.
I know.
Well, listen, I can continue with a gazillion questions, looking at bringing all the findings back. I know the stick comes out when I start talking. Shut up, John. No, I think there's a lot to talk about in terms of you have all this data that you're finding these things. How do you learn from that and bring it back in so you don't make the same mistakes and keep paying out on the same thing? We won't go there now. Maybe just a final thought from you on where you think bug bounties and vuln disclosure and the community is kind of heading in the next few years.
I think that we're going to see the bounty hunter community continue to expand, as well as the number of companies running bug bounties. The competition for researcher attention on a program is going to continue to increase. And so we're gonna end up seeing some interesting supply and demand cycles. And I think companies are gonna have to get really creative and do not just flashy marketing, but really captivating scenarios that researchers are excited about. Something really challenging where, you know, yes, I could find, you know, 15 of this kind of bug and another website that pops up tomorrow, or I'm going to work with a team of researchers and, you know, go do something really substantial and push the envelope. And so I think we're going to see more creative programs come out from organizations to attract researchers. And I think we'll continue to see organizations realize that investment in training programs is going to help with diversification and feeding that supply of talented researchers.
And I think there is a diversity on that at the personality level. I think it's like in the business world. Some people are gonna be happy to grab the low-hanging fruit and some people wants to go to the moon.
Well,
and you gotta give the opportunity to all of them to live the life they wanna live.
The low-hanging fruits at the moon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, you need both types. You absolutely need both types of sort of hunter profiles. You know, you need the people who are extremely targeted, and you need the people who are, you know, just clearing them out, like cleaning up entire classes of issues.
Right.
So there's value in both.
And they want to be creative and really make a difference.
Right. And, you know, the challenge is everyone's motivated by different things. And there is no one-size-fits-all engagement program. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you know, don't like hearing that. You know, I gave them money. Why isn't that enough? And it's like, well, some people like reputation. Some mm-hmm. people like experiences and engagement. And what they really want is to be able to have a conversation with a developer. And if you really want to have a robust and mature program that protects customers, you'll have to diversify your engagement plan and do all of those.
As with most things where an investment is being made, what are you trying to really accomplish?
Exactly.
Answer that question.
Customer protection.
Hopefully it all flows from there.
Many more questions, many more answers. Yes. We'll love to have you on again.
I would love to come back again.
I love these conversations. It's something that we've been covering quite extensively, and we want to keep doing so.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
Thanks again for joining us for our Hacker Summer Camp event coverage. This episode was made possible by the generosity of our sponsors. We'd like to thank Reversing Labs, BugCrowd, StealthBits, and RiskSense for their support. Reversing Labs helps organizations find and neutralize the enemy within by providing advanced malware analysis and insights into destructive files and objects to address the latest attacks, advanced persistent threats, and polymorphic malware. BugCrowd combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most advanced hackers. StealthFitz focuses on protecting an organization's sensitive data and credentials attackers use to steal that data by helping companies remove inappropriate data access, enforce security policy, and detect advanced threats. The cloud-based RiskSense platform uses a foundation of risk-based scoring, analytics, and technology-accelerated pen testing to identify critical security weaknesses. With the teams at RiskSense, StealthBits, BugCrowd, and Reversing Labs, we appreciate your support. If you'd like to be part of and support these conversations, be sure to visit our event coverage section on ITSP Magazine and drop us a line. We'd love to have you join us for one of our journeys.